Greetings. This is Amy Suzara bringing you the poetry segment on Setting the Standard, KPFA 94.1. Tonight I have a guest, Maya Chinchilla, a Central American Guatemalan poet, performer, video artist, and scholar. She's a founding member of the performance group Las Manas and has curated artistic events investigating and celebrating the intersection of politics, media, and art for more than 15 years. Maya also teaches classes with intersections of literature, creative writing, gender, sexuality, immigration, Chicano, Chicana, Latino, Latina, Central American culture and history as a lecturer at SF State University. Maya, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our theme for this show is around the intersections of art and education, and I thought that you would be a perfect fit for this with the kind of work that you're doing and the themes that you're bringing in through your art, as well as your role as a lecturer and as an educator at large. I'm interested in looking at how your work explores politics, history, culture, and art, and I guess, how do you first identify yourself? Do you call yourself a writer, an artist, or an educator? And why might you use those terms?
I feel like I've been playing with what my job is or what kind of work I've been doing in the past. And I think about the ways that I am sort of a poet historian. My background, my culture is... They're, poets and artists and writers and journalists are people that were very integral in as part of society, as well as some of the first people to disappear under dictatorship and, especially in places like Guatemala. So to me, I've always seen this power of arts and culture and the word and speaking your truth, as well as the craft of being able to speak that truth, when you may not always necessarily be able to say everything up front, right, because of struggling with information. And I feel that we also have that sense these days as well when we're feeling like we're trying to find the right words of what it is we're experiencing in the world and with the way our government is acting abroad and here in the world and the surveillance. And so it's very interesting how, we think about these types of restrictions on language and expression and cultural expression as being something that's happening somewhere else, but is also, feels like it happens here as well.
It sounds like you really take that role as a cultural worker, at heart, that this is what drives you to do your creative work.
It's very interesting because, as a young person, starting back from maybe junior high, high school, and there was a lot of political situations happening around bilingual education and, a lot of tensions in my own high school. And I was growing up and there around the LA riots or uprising. And so you start to realize, like, there's all these people and we have all these tensions and there's all these class differences and people are living differently depending on how much you have and who you are and what skin color you have and what access you have to citizenship. And that once you start to learn your own history, that this is something that's happening over and over and over, that it's not just brand new, right? And it's based on, the way that our country has been built and what our country has done abroad in other places. And that's why a lot of those folks are here, right? Going to college, I was like, okay, I know who I am. My parents are very active and involved in the solidarity movements in Central America and in Los Angeles. I want to know more about my history. I would see so many people getting very excited about, new identities and wanting to express that in certain ways, like people having, the posters of maybe of thinkers and, the Aztec calendar on their wall. And I'm like, okay, what's that for me? Do I get like a poster of Tikal, like the ruins in Guatemala, or, what is that for me? So I started to realize that there was really little information about my own people and my own culture, and also the experience of being a second generation Central American in the U.S. So a lot of my first writings were exploring that and talking about that in-between space that I share with a lot of other folks who are, either second generation or experience, bicultural families as I do and as I did growing up, like that hunger to kind of know oneself is a very human experience. And and I think writing has been that way to kind of, you know, get there. To, since it's not written, we have to ask those stories from our elders, from each other. We have to fill in the blanks ourselves.
What you're saying is reminding me of a couple of actually authors that I'm currently teaching in my classes right now, who speak about bearing witness, and not just bearing witness. Like, for one author I'm thinking about is Carolyn Forche, talks about bearing witness as this important role from an outsider point of view. But you're also talking about witnessing your own culture, your own history, and, you know, via your parents and via, like, the rich history that you may have not been presented. And I'm thinking about Henry Louis Gates, and he talks about re-remembering, and this process of remembering as a way to name and almost craft and create the history that didn't seem to exist, even though it did exist, right? So it really sounds like this, you know, the way that you're tracing this path as an artist really touches upon how you're crafting, you know, history through your work.
Right, because it's not just about doing exactly what our ancestors did and, you know, following a tradition exactly one way, because culture grows and is shaped by our surroundings, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm influenced by, you know, hip-hop, rock, punk rock, like, you know, street culture, you know, all of the literature that I've read, public television, you know, all these different things make up who I am. And so I play a lot around this idea of, like, what is an authentic, you know, Central American? And even using that word, Central American, like, I don't think a whole lot of people use that unless they're being really specific about trying to connect with a larger group of people.
Right.
You know,
right,
a lot of people would say, no, I'm Guatemalan, I'm Honduran, I'm Salvadoran, you know? And even though our countries are very distinct and different, there are some similarities there. And I think it's important to mark the differences because we don't want to erase any histories,
right,
but also to talk about sort of the unifying issues that, you know, that do unite us.
I mean, I'm learning a lot even just hearing about, you know, these categories that I feel sometimes I'm not quite sure. A lot of times we don't really know, you know, especially if it's not our own experience, but even if it is our own, what is the appropriate way to name and categorize when, you know, there's been so many layers of history and changes and demarcations. So just kind of taking it to this idea, and I think even just how you talk about the work is very, I want to say the educational, but that, you know, that's not even the best word, but you're really illuminating a lot through how you're describing your work and the roots of your work. I want to turn attention a little bit to how you teach Latina and Latino studies, and how do you see your curriculum as engaging yourself as a poet and artist? What is the role of art in these settings?
It's really interesting because I've had the most incredible opportunity to teach so many different types of classes. Very first semester teaching, I was teaching a class called Resistance Literature of the Americas. So that was based in literature. The other one was Central American History and Heritage. So that was more focused on history and immigration and a little bit of politics. And then the other one was Gendered Borders, which is about, you know, women's work, women migrating, domestic workers, the women of Juarez, some topics like that. So what was interesting is very easily into the literature class, we could talk, weave in poetry and the way poetry has been such a powerful driving force in Latin America. We read works from the border. We read Desert Blood, that is about the women of Juarez. We read The Inhabited Woman, which is from Nicaragua. One Day of Life from El Salvador, I Rigoberta Menchú. And all throughout that, we were able to watch poems on YouTube, as well as read poetry from the different areas, the different regions. And I actually happen to have a poem about the women of Juarez, and I'm living in the Mission District, and kind of like that experience of traveling over there, coming back with all this, like, you know, feeling within my own body and wanting to share the story of what I experienced, but also what it's like to be a woman and kind of know that violence, right? So in that class, it's very easy for me to share work, right? And it's, so I'd share some of it, but I'm still working out at what point do I kind of reveal to be myself to be a poet and a writer. And so that kind of happened for me a little bit more in the middle of the semester. The other classes, I'm able to bring in a lot of different types of art, visual as well as written. Poetry serves this really powerful experience in the class because it is shorter. We can experience it all together. Mm-hmm. We can read it aloud. We can read it again. We can look at it really closely. And, you know, it can be really compact. And we're talking about all these grand concepts about imperialism and colonization. And, you know, I can bring in a Pablo Neruda poem that talks mm-hmm. about the United Fruit Company you know, the rotting fruit and mm-hmm. all these images that he conjures up. And all of a sudden, it's like a light bulb goes on and they get it.
Right.
So it's so amazing when that happens because they need to read all the historical documents. They need to look into the research and, you know, because it's such a contentious history as well. There's all this, you know, struggle between the left and the right and then critiques of both sides. And then there's people who don't want to even talk about left or right anymore and, you know, want to talk about what's happening right now, as well as, you know, what's happening in terms of our environment and hurricanes and earthquakes. But, you know, to be able to have that kind of boil mm-hmm. down to the essence while they still have that historical context is the most amazing teaching mm-hmm. moment ever.
Yes, yes. And they're very lucky to have the opportunity for you to do that mm-hmm. with them. So I'm interested in hearing some of your work, your poetic work,
okay.
as we could hear a little bit of how you're doing this.
I really like to share this piece that is about immigration.
Okay.
It's called Paperless or Papeles. He always dreamed, so he picked up from his go-nowhere musician situation. She never sat still and was that fine language on the pillow, country by country, estudiante. He complained gringas don't know how to put themselves together, all fodongas y flojas. She laughed hard when he said he was a feminist, because he'd protect a woman from a beatdown. She just wanted to be friends. He had too many groupies. She always had time for everyone and everything. He liked waiting for her so he could watch her rushing to see him. He spent the night, but he slept in the other room. He'd hoped she'd come back soon and told her he'd come visit the U.S. She thought, that's what everyone says. They wrote letters and postcards because he didn't have a phone. She always thought about the future. He didn't think he had one. She wasn't sure she wanted to go out that night. Her friends thought she needed a break from school, a break from work. His friends thought he needed to go out more after two jobs and night school. She saw him and couldn't believe it. Was that her rockero on the dance floor? He saw her and couldn't believe it. Was that his little estudiante? She taught him to dance as if he was squashing grapes with his toes. It was the first time something good had happened to him in the U.S. For the first time, she let herself get all desperate and dramática. 2 weeks passed, and he asked her to be his girlfriend, al formal y la chingada. For the first time, he wanted to be domesticated and thought the moment-to-moment planning might be enough. With love in her heart and justice on her mind, she thought she'd use her birthright to save him, save herself. A ritual, a sacrifice, to show her love was down. She bought her dress at the mall with her dad. He bought his first suit. All present felt the magic in that simple moment. When she saw tears in his eyes, she knew he really loved her. He said he always would, and used three languages just to make sure. She loves to cuddle all day. But remember, she has to fill out the paperwork. Because the immigration lines just keep getting longer, and they pay into the system that guarantees nothing. The lawyer said the Unabomber and 9/11 set off laws that might separate them. It's been 10 years, and he wants to see his mama. 10 years, and she pretends to keep the hope for both of them. He threatens to go back after all they've spent on lawyering. He says don't sympathize with the situation, because he already feels like shit for causing so much trouble. She knows what she did was right, but she still feels all wrong. She wonders why she falls apart so easily, given all those opportunities. She says, everything will be cool. He says, nothing has been cool since.
Es imposible, mi cielo, tan separados vivir, tan separados vivir.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Yes. So we're just kind of wrapping up right here, and I want to just see if there's something you want to let us know that's on your plate and how we're going to be able to reach you.
I have a Facebook page, Maya Chinchilla. I also am on Twitter. I like to, you know, try to connect and see what's happening out there. My Twitter handle, I think you could look me up as Chacha Chapina or La Guatemanteca. So that's G-U-A-T-E-M-A-N-T-E-C-A. And I'm going to be producing a show at La Peña with Peacock Rebellion. And it's going to be November 8th and 9th. So Thursday and Friday at 8 o'clock, there'll be a pre-show. And it's actually about the dreams and disasters of the nonprofit industrial complex. Ooh. So hopefully that is enough to whet your appetite and to find out more about it.
All right. So we'll check you out on Twitter and Facebook. And it was so wonderful to have you, Maya. And best of luck with everything.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
So this is Amy Suzara with the poetry segment on Setting the Standard. And now we're back to some music with Pedro Reyes.